from Refine Labs. This is State of Demand Gen.
Well, let's dig into the catalyst to start Refine Labs, because I've been a follower of yours since your early days of really creating an amazing LinkedIn following. And if I'm not mistaken, you interviewed for 20 B2B marketing jobs before you started Refine Labs. And part of it was that your orientation and philosophy just wasn't aligned with almost every B2B cloud company out there. Can you talk a little bit more about how that was a catalyst for you?
Pretty much, yeah. So I spent about 2 years at a venture-funded company called Vapotherm, a company that was doing no digital demand before I got there, 100% of outbound field sales. Came in there, helped them build a digital demand program, ended up driving millions of dollars of revenue for the company, which eventually IPO'd and continues to be successful. And I did that by purely optimizing for pipeline and revenue and not worrying about leads, not worrying about attribution, not worrying about anything. The company only cared, are we driving, is marketing driving more revenue relative to how much we're investing in marketing? And so I did a lot of things that most marketers never do because they have all of these fake constraints put up. We need to measure attribution. Where's attribution on our leads? All these things that are made up stories that don't actually need to be true. And so I felt like I had a much better strategy than what most companies were doing. I went out and pitched this as a VP of marketing type of role to a lot of software and technology companies. And you're right. The story is that nobody hired me because the way that I saw the world didn't align to the things that they were being told about how to do marketing back then. And I thought that was a gift. So that allowed me, everything happens for a reason, that allowed me to see, hey, maybe I need to go in my own path. And so what I did is I started as a consultant. I started talking about the things that I believe in LinkedIn and started to attract a lot of people that saw the world the same way that I did. And so I see that there's a major divide happening right now in B2B marketing. People that do B2B marketing in 2010 window, marketing automation, technology-driven land. And there's a new thing that's coming up. People that are executing in dark social, that are putting out content specifically, that are spending a lot of time with customers, that are doing fundamentals well. And there's a divergence happening here. And I think people need to think about which direction they want to go with their career.
Let's double click into that right now, because that's what I really wanted to talk about today. I want to get into metrics and what metrics we want to use. But before that, your vision of the world. Tell me a little bit about how your strategy and the associated tactics look for the modern B2B marketer. What is your view of the right B2B marketing strategy today, Chris?
So my belief, and it's, I think, more than a belief backed by a lot of data and experience and things that are out there, is that B2B buyers are making decisions about where to buy things in specific places that can't be tracked by attribution software, do not generate intent data. Those places, social networks like LinkedIn, Instagram and Facebook, Twitter or otherwise, content platforms like YouTube or a podcast, communities like Revenue Collective, Slack, or all of the specialized ones that exist for other functions. Groups on social networks like Facebook groups, LinkedIn groups, or otherwise, direct word of mouth, conversations with peers, whether that's on phone calls, Zoom, some type of Slack channel, text message, DMs, anything. There are all of these places where people are sharing content, deciding what their business priorities for next year should be, discovering new products, assessing what other people in their function are doing to solve certain problems. That's where all of the B2B buying is actually happening. And then you have B2B marketers that spend all their time in specific channels that are easy to measure in lower funnel because they need to have attribution to do certain things. And so marketers spend all their time in SEO and SEM, basically all lead gen channels, content syndication, display ads, because they've created fake metrics to support display ads and other things. And so when you look at it at a tactical level, there's a divide of where I see where people are actually making buying decisions versus where marketers are actually marketing simply because of how attribution is set up inside of their company, which force certain behaviors. So would be happy to go into a follow-up because that was probably a little bit more detailed than what you were looking for there.
Well, here's what's interesting, because I have a few more years in corporate America than you do. That's a nice way to say it. I'm a hell of a lot older. But what you're saying, I would view as digital brand awareness, because a lot of the content marketing and social media channels, et cetera, you're building brand awareness. And of course, we also build individual awareness, right? Mm-hmm. And the problem is, over the last 20 years, one of the beautiful things about performance marketing was direct return on investment analysis capability. Hey, if we spent this much money on paid search, we could track that potential customer through the pipeline. So are you saying that even performance marketing techniques of the last 20 years might be a little outdated, or is it the blend and balance of everything, Chris, that's important.
So the first thing that you mentioned is about awareness. I want to help change people's perspective on this. At this very moment, a lot of software companies do not have an awareness problem. They have a relevance problem. Everyone knows who Salesforce is, but Salesforce is not relevant to me as a B2B marketer. I never see their content. I never see anything. You could do that for a ton of different brands, mid-market, SMB, anything. I know who they are. I know very little about their point of view. I don't have affinity specifically to their brand, and they are not relevant to marketing to places where marketers are. So I want to split those things off because it drives different behaviors. Awareness drives impressions of logos. That's what people are trying to do. How do I show my logo? How do I do this? Versus how do I create a 6-minute video that makes such an impact for this person that they feel differently about me and my company afterwards? And there's a very different divide there between those two. When we think about direct ROI, it's super fascinating. Basically, all companies live in lead gen mode, which is direct attribution, direct response type of things where I'm going to put some money in and I'm going to get leads out and they're going to be quantified. It's single channel marketing. And so they do that. They collect all the leads with great attribution at cheap cost per leads. And then fascinating that they never actually track the customer acquisition cost of those or how they progress through a funnel. They're so data-driven, they're so ROI-driven, but I go into all these companies that spend hundreds of thousands of dollars a month collecting leads. Content syndication is a big one, but there's plenty of other ones. And they have customer acquisition cost payback periods of 5 years, just on the advertising spend, not the marketing headcount, not the sales commissions, none of it. And so that's where the divide is. Do I think that there are some places where direct response marketing works and you can get customers at low customer acquisition costs? For sure. But companies overspend there and they overspend there. And then the second thing that they do is they don't focus on the places where B2B buying actually happens. They sit at the bottom of the funnel and wait for people to try and show up. And then they try and win those deals with people that are vendor agnostic. And I would much rather be in the places where people actually set their business priorities, where they actually make decisions so that I'm not waiting for someone to decide or see a problem or something like that to decide that they want to buy something in the category of product that we're selling. I would want to be in the places driving people to consider our category, to understand more about why it's important for their business. That's what most companies don't do right now.
Well, let's pull the curtain back on that. Where are they initially doing their consideration to buy? What are those locations and channels, Chris, that you think we should over-index on?
It's all of the ones that I mentioned. It's basically being visible on the internet using content that is customer focused and value focused, not sales funnel focused. A lot of companies can't do that either. And so the places that I would say, it depends on who you're selling to, but predominantly social networks, whether it's paid or organic, you're going to use paid on certain ones, you're going to go organic on certain ones. You have content platforms, putting out a podcast, putting out YouTube videos, other things like that. Being present in communities where people are interacting on a daily basis, putting out content in meetups or third-party events or third-party podcasts. I think all of those are major opportunities that companies don't do. What I'm trying to communicate here is nobody needs to do any of the things that I'm saying. You're just going to get mediocre results that have declining ROI. And over time, maybe one of your competitors or someone that you don't see coming figures this stuff out and crushes your business. So this is all upside opportunity. Companies don't move on it because they're just stuck. They just don't get it.
Well, one of the things, and it was a catalyst for me to invite you to the Metrics of Measure Up podcast, is what are the metrics that a modern B2B marketer should be really focused on to be able to prove their value and success? And you, I think, highlight a lot. It's revenue. And next to that is qualified pipeline. So my first question to you on that is, but Chris, marketers can't control if sales is able to actually close a deal. How in the hell can you hold them responsible to a goal of revenue and pipeline dollars, Chris?
The only time I hear marketers make this excuse are marketers that are not good at marketing. Good marketers will never make this excuse because I know that if I generate 100 high quality opportunities, qualified accounts, whatever you want to say, for my sales team, and then they go out and they generate 100 on their own, they're going to win way more of the ones that I generate. I know that for sure. And so all you have to do is compare it. If they're closing deals outbound, if they're closing deals from other sources, the stuff from marketing should be closing more better than that, better clip than that. So there's a really easy way to benchmark it. I'm not concerned at all about my sales team's ability to close business. That's like being a quarterback and being like, oh, I'm not accountable to this because my wide receiver can't catch the ball. You're on a team. And so I want people to change their mindset on that. Like, it's not hard as a marketer. I think that the number one thing, the number one factor about whether or not you move deals to qualified pipeline and whether or not they close are firmographic fit and level of intent. And a person, like when we're optimizing our marketing, I'm optimizing for peak intent conversions. I want somebody, decision maker, on our website asking for a demo and to talk to our sales team right now.
What's interesting, Chris, I do a lot of research on behalf of B2B technology vendors. And one of those I just completed was, what percentage of organizations actually use intent data to prioritize their outbound outreach and really sales outreach? Do you know, 24%, only 24% of companies say they regularly use intent data to actually prioritize outbound research. But what really blew me away was that almost 40% of companies say, my sales development reps, they prioritize their own outbound outreach without any help from marketing. Does that surprise you?
So I want to just help people clarify the difference between what I think what most people think when they hear intent data versus what I'm talking about. Intent data, when most people hear, they're looking at some type of signals that come from third-party websites like review sites or search or some type of website traffic, third-party intent data. I'm talking about first-party data where somebody comes in and says, hey, I want to buy your stuff now. And there's a very big difference on that. So, and the win rates and the sales cycles and everything will show that those are very different levels of intent. But anyway, moving through, it doesn't surprise me at the level of adoption here. I think what people really need to consider and what I'm pushing people to consider is that how your SDRs prioritize outbound outreach is not a marketing function anymore. This is a revenue operations, sales operations function. It's data and technology driven. It's not customer focus driven. So let your marketers go out and do real marketing and drive demand, and let somebody else handle the operations of how to prioritize outbound. It's a rare perspective, but that's how I see it.
I wanted to circle back to first party intent data versus third party intent data. And kind of using more simple language for some of our listening audience that don't have your level of knowledge, is that people who put their hand up on your website, whatever your digital channel is, and says, hey, I want to talk to someone in your organization. Is that what you mean by first party intent?
That's what we're optimizing for here. So essentially a hand raiser that says, I want to talk to your sales team about buying this stuff. And so that's the metric that we're optimizing for. The problem that I find where most marketers get stuck here is that they don't know how to get more people to come in and do that. So they don't feel like they have a lot of control on that. So they need to go out and they need to reach. They need to go into content syndication and other platforms to collect bad leads because they don't know how to get more people to come to their website and act that are qualified that actually want to buy.
Let me ask you this. Of all the, I'll say, prospects you talk to, and the research I've done, less than 50% even know the close rate characteristics of a true inbound lead, first party, I want to talk to a salesperson, versus every close they have. Do you find that as a common industry challenge?
I think that number is above 90%. If you look at reality, I think that 90% of people don't know what the differences are.
We're being generous.
And so if it was self-reported, I think a lot of people reported something that actually wasn't true, because in my experience, less than 1 out of 10 companies actually even measure this. Which is crazy. It's crazy. All they do is they look at all of the sources blended and they don't see that their outbound wins at 7% and their website source deals win at 40%. And then they just blend it all together and they optimize for certain metrics because they don't see the differences and they end up not getting the results that they want. It's so fascinating. We talk about being so data driven, so technology obsessed, all these things, and there are blind, obvious things that are related to the business that people don't even look for.
So anyways, one of the things that we're brought in to do all the time is these key performance indicator assessments. And we look at, number one, what are those metrics that their investors, board of directors are asking of their CEO and CFO? Things like your CAC payback period, your CAC ratio, your gross dollar retention, net dollar retention, you know them all. And then I look at, what are the next layer of objectives and metrics that the heads of each department are responsible for? And do they have a causal relationship to those company value creating metrics that the board wants to know? And I'm going to get into detail here. So one of the things I have asked is, do you know what your marketing CAC ratio is? Do you know what your sales development CAC ratio is in your sales? And what I mean by that is, for every opportunity that closes and you have ARR associated, how many of those were from inbound leads, which is marketing attributed, right? And how many marketing dollars did you need to spend for every dollar of ARR from an inbound lead? Does that make sense to you to have marketing CAC ratio only being measured for inbound leads that result in a close, or is that too simple?
No, I call that a blended marketing CAC if you're looking at total marketing spend, and it would be blended advertising CAC if you were just looking at the advertising or program spend. So that's the way that I look at it as well.
What's interesting though, and this is a 90% data, and it was actually, I think, 93 of the companies that I do these KPI assessments for, they have their CAC ratio. They have a blended CAC for new and expansion. They have a new CAC and they have a expansion CAC, but they never even get it down to what the marketing CAC ratio is for new versus expansion. And I'm just amazed that the marketing organizations are saying, I'm not responsible for CAC ratio. That's the sales responsibility. Do you hear that?
It's 2021, September 2nd, 2021. The easiest way to lower your total company blended CAC is to do marketing better. And so like, it's super simple. Since 2017, when I've been doing this, I saw our marketing sourced customer acquisition cost is 10% of our outbound BDR customer acquisition cost. Why don't we spend more money in marketing so we can acquire customers for 10 times less than outbound? And companies continue to scale their outbound team because they don't see the differences. It's fascinating. So I see this effect as well. The differences, it's going to depend by company, but the things that I normally see is if you look at it at cost per sales qualified opportunity, outbound sales qualified opportunity, you're going to pay somewhere between $6,000 and $8,000 for a mid-market velocity sale. And inbound your marketing source, you're going to pay $2,000 to $3,000. So 50% less CAC if you win those at the same rate. You'll actually win the marketing deals at a higher rate than outbound. So your CAC will most likely be somewhere between 50 and 67% less than outbound sales.
And I think a potential additional value of measuring that is when you raise that $25 million or $50 million in your Series B or Series C, and you're deciding how to allocate that investment to accelerate growth. Today, it's basically, well, I spend 70% on sales, and I spend 30% on marketing, so I'm just going to allocate your portion of it 70-30. Mm-hmm. That there's no true metrics that say, oh, maybe I should give 42% to marketing, because to your point, the CAC is going to be a lot lower for marketing-generated leads. Do you see that same kind of, I don't actually know how to allocate budgets because I don't have the right metrics?
The thing that I see across the board is that marketers struggle to put together business cases for CFOs and CEOs to talk about why we should invest $3 million a year more in marketing next year. They struggle to put that together. And there's two reasons. Either one, they don't have a high level of business acumen, so they can't put that together. I actually think that one is less likely. The other one is that the stuff that they're doing just isn't effective and they don't have a case to make. And so those are the two reasons. When we think about, if you go back to the blended marketing CAC for 1 second, when companies are running 100% lead gen, direct response marketing, you shouldn't be looking at it blended. You should be looking at it channel level. And you should see that your content syndication CAC payback is 50 months. And your LinkedIn lead gen payback is 42 months. And your website sourced is 3 months, right? And see the differences in these channels. So that's something that people should look at. Depending on your marketing model, if you're direct response lead gen, you should do single channel marketing. If it's multi-channel marketing, you should measure blended marketing CAC.
Yeah, but even though we're talking about metrics, at the end of the day, I think we agree that revenue is the ultimate outcome metric to measure for a CMO. Agreed?
Revenue, qualified pipeline, customer acquisition cost.
So now you've raised this $20 million on the hope of, you know, what you told the investors, I'm going to grow at 60% a year, and I'm going to go from $20 to $50 million over the next, you know, 20 months. So now everyone's got these amazing stretch goals that they have no freaking idea how to get there. So they say, okay, marketing, here's your $15 million. What are you going to give me? And if they're going to measure it quarterly, Chris, or even 2 quarters in a row, they're going to have to be leading indicators, which are often vanity metrics, versus the ultimate lagging indicator of revenue qualified pipeline. So my question to you is, we have a lot of, I'll say, earlier stage CEOs and founders who listen to our show, kind of in that $2 to $10 million ARR. How do we get them convinced that taking a long game approach to marketing activities and marketing investment will trump the vanity metrics of I generated more leads last quarter, so I'm doing my job. How do you get them to transform their approach?
So for the CEOs, this is truly a balance between short-term and long-term. And the problem at most organizations is that they do the wrong things with their budget, so they don't hit their short-term goals, so they can't focus at all on the long-term. So the real solution here is optimizing your marketing spend and setting the right goals so that your marketing team predictably hits goals every single month or every single quarter. Once you do that, then you can start to take a long-term view. Then you can start to play marketing offense. And so once your team is hitting the goals and you have predictable channels that are driving the amount of pipeline that your sales team needs to hit their goals, then you can start playing with the high impact channels. You can start to play with a podcast. You can start to handle a weekly event. You can start to think about building a community. You can think about starting to build an industry news site that if you did those things right for 18 months, 2 years, then you create a growth avenue that nothing else can replace. You can't get it from a funding round. You can't get it from a new VP of sales. You can't get it from an acquisition of a new thing. There's nothing that can replace having a marketing channel that hits really hard for a sustained period of time. And people can't get to the place that they can think long-term because they either set the wrong goals, so the goals are too high and unachievable, so you just spin around trying to hit vanity metrics and keep going, or they just aren't just not doing marketing effectively in order to hit the goals. And so that it truly comes down to hitting your goals first, which allow marketers to look at the world with a long-term customer-focused lens.
So you said something that I never kind of caught from your messaging before, and I think it's really important for our listening audience. You need to have some short-term goals and successes to earn the right to make the larger investments in these long-term strategic plays, right? Just summarize what you said.
Totally, yeah. And the long-term strategic things are investments of time, not a lot of money.
So you're a new CMO. You just got hired. You've got some experience, but in a more traditional performance marketing lead gen model. And you want to follow the Chris Walker philosophy and theory over the next 2 to 3 years. What are the top 2 to 3 metrics in the first 90 to 180 days that CMO should be telling the CEO, here's how you can measure whether my short-term strategy is going to justify the long-term investment? What are those 2 to 3?
So depending on the scale and the situation coming into the company, it can vary. But the things that I would think about are, one, in 90 days, you should be able to make a decently meaningful move to qualify pipeline generation that comes through your website by doing conversion rate optimization, by focusing on high intent channels, by optimizing the lead handoff to sales. You can make a meaningful move, 30 to 50% minimum on qualified pipeline for a growth stage company. So qualified pipeline should be moving. This is not really a metric that we should be looking at, but this is a metric that I would score if I was a CEO. And it would be, how do we build something where we consistently get customer insights to drive marketing and sales? And so that could be a weekly event. That could be some type of content platform. That could be being involved in some type of community. No marketers do that. The insights, the customer insights are what drives strategy, effective strategy. And so being able to, in the first 90 days, figure out a way where your customers are feeding you insights that your competitors don't get, that's something that I'm looking to do in the first 90 days, whether that's, there's plenty of different examples. That's another one.
You expect marketing to actually talk to the market and listen? That's really bold.
Definition of marketing.
No, I'm just saying it's really bold because we know how many marketing organizations are so... they talk to each other in a conference room for hours and hours to come up with a strategy versus talking to 20 either existing customers or potential customers.
Mm-hmm. And that's a B2B legacy organizational mindset that sales is the only one that touches customers and blah, 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 blah. If you force me to pick three, there's been a really interesting metric coming along lately, which is I've seen with very strong positive correlation to pipeline is increase in direct website traffic.
Really? Direct website traffic, because used to vanity metric was website visitors, but you're saying there is a high correlation.
It's hard to fake direct website traffic. Easy to fake website traffic overall, but direct website traffic is a brand surrogate metric. Someone's typing in your company name and coming to your website. It's a very interesting metric to move. And we're seeing it almost perfectly aligned with growth in pipeline. 80% growth in direct traffic, 80% growth in qualified pipeline.
So earned media traffic versus paid media traffic or both?
It's not even really earned. Like, so if you think about how someone's going to get to you. They can go to Google and they can search, you know, SaaS benchmarks and find your website in some long tail blog, or they can go in and search Ray Reich, and they don't actually, it's not even a search. It just goes rayreich.com and they go straight there. And so if you have, if you're a SaaS brand, the people that go into their browser and type in your brand name and land on your homepage that are not your customers, that are literally just people that are interested, is a way higher quality visit than someone that searches some long tail blog transactionally, gets some information and leaves. And so that's why direct website traffic has been very interesting. We run this model for companies over a 6 to 12 month period of time and see direct website traffic increase enormously and organic traffic stay flat while pipeline grows.
Very interesting. Chris, I could talk to you for hours, but we're going to have to wrap up this episode. But I want our listening audience to get to know you a little bit better through three quick questions. Cool. And the first one is, you know, which CEO or company do you think is a must follow today?
I don't have anyone on the top of my head, so I'm going to pass them.
Great. Well, at least you don't throw out Elon Musk, like 50% of my guests do. Okay, let's do the second one. Which tool should every modern B2B marketer be using today?
Common sense.
Is common sense an actual tool? Because I'm not aware of it. Or common sense what we all should have?
I'm saying that B2B marketers prioritize technology over common sense, and they should think about leveraging common sense more than technology.
I love your contrarian approach. I really do. And the third, and I'm going to take a risk on this one, but you went through the corporate route before you came and created your own company. So if you were talking to either a recent college graduate like my daughter or a very early career, first year professional, what advice would you give them to manage their career?
So the first thing is that you need to find the right vehicle to be in. You need to be in the right organization with the right leaders where you can learn. The first 5 to 10 years of your career, you should optimize for learning. How much am I learning? How do I find my way into board decisions so I can see how decisions are made? How can I figure out how to get involved in understanding what the P&L is reading so I can learn finances? How do I understand how executives are making decisions and why they're doing certain things? These are all things that I've done, which allowed me to have a very large breadth of skills coming out of it, saying like, these are all the things that these CEOs and these companies did that I thought was stupid. I'm never going to do any of those things. These are all the things that I thought that people did really great at. I want to continue to replicate those and make them my own. And so being in the right companies where you can learn a lot and being focused on learning, not focused on figuring out how you can make the most money as quickly as you can, I think are some of the advice that I would give.
You know, it's funny. Over 50% of my guests talk about always be learning, be a student of the industry, get cross-functional experience. So very much aligned with what you just said, Chris. And I'll tell you, if anyone has followed you over the last few years, I think you're a great role model for a lot of early career people. In fact, for our listening audience, if they want to follow you and get to know you a little bit better, what's the best places to do that, Chris?
Feel free to follow me on LinkedIn, Chris Walker. I post content there almost every day. Also, the State of Demand Gen podcast is a B2B demand-focused marketing podcast that over 20,000 people listen to and are getting a ton of value from for objective marketing strategy advice. And so if you're interested, feel free to check that out too. Hey everyone, thanks for checking out this episode of the State of Demand Gen podcast. You know, it's crazy to think that now more than 15,000 demand marketers, sales reps, product marketers, field marketers, CMOs, and everything in between are listening to this podcast and getting a ton of value out of it. And so if you've been listening to the podcast and you've been getting value out of it, I would really, really, really appreciate if you could leave a rating in the podcast section. It would mean a lot to me. Thank you, and see you for the next episode.